Docket with 8660866660. Parties ready to proceed? Yes, you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal? 5 minutes, perfect. Okay, you can go ahead and start.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Chad Fears, and I represent the petitioners, Rencher, Gershon, Mesher, Roman, Van Skyk, and Hornsby. In the combined petitions, there's two questions that confront the court. The first, does the district court's assertion of jurisdiction over non-resident employees of a co-defendant corporation who do not purposely direct their actions towards Dr. Ahmed or the real parties in interest violate due process? The second, procedurally, question is, did the district court err in denying petitioners' motions to dismiss that contained evidence when it relied on the mere allegations in the real parties in interest complaint? We'll start with the second question, I think is the easier one. Well, to answer the question, both U.S. Supreme Court and decisions of this esteemed Nevada Supreme Court answered both those questions yes. On the second question, the procedural one, Nevada Supreme Court decisions are very clear that plaintiffs have the burden to prove personal jurisdiction when it is raised. Now, there was a non-evidentiary hearing, so their burden was only...
In Trump, when it says, by production of some evidence, what does that mean to you?
Production of some evidence would mean to me that there is some, either a document, a declaration, affidavit, something that is tangible beyond just an allegation in a complaint. In the Trump case, you actually had, what I can tell from the decision, you had a contract that was shuttled back and forth from New Jersey to Nevada. You had affidavits, maybe they didn't have affidavits, but they did have testimony that this Mr. Rabis, I'm probably mispronouncing his name, had several communications with Mr. Gomez. And then you have this contract of whether Mr. Gomez was in fact the agent of the Trump Corporation or Mr. Trump himself. So those are some of the evidence, at least in that case, that would, you need to have something that's more than just an allegation, something that's put under oath, something that's tangible, like a contract. Those are kind of things that would be required after.
What about a verified complaint?
A verified complaint, one signed under oath, would at least get, I think you would have to say that would be something that could be evidence. I mean, because it is signed under oath. So it is akin to other kinds of evidence that we would see, whether that's a declaration or affidavit. But then you have to go beyond that. I don't know if this was a verified complaint here. So that question, academic, is not at issue in this case.
Is there any reason why we shouldn't just remand and allow some jurisdictional discovery to go forward?
There is that opportunity. I don't know how much more you would need. And I think we need to look more at the contacts of these individuals. They have produced information. There was an opportunity to do an evidentiary hearing. It was not asked for. Plaintiffs could have asked for that. They didn't, especially in light of us producing declarations on certain points.
Do they have to ask for an evidentiary hearing? Does Trump require an evidentiary hearing?
No, Trump does not require an evidentiary hearing. But it also states in that you cannot rely merely on allegations of your complaint. So they needed to at least produce some evidence to get past, to make that prima facie case. Now, if it was an evidentiary hearing, that changes the standard a little. It's not required. But if you want to get to that lower level, the prima facie case, you need to produce some evidence that was missing from the plaintiffs or the real party in interest. So when we look at that you have to have evidence, my clients did produce evidence. They did not. So from a procedural point of view.
Well, they did attach exhibits with their complaint, including affidavits, right?
They did produce an affidavit of a certain doctor, not an issue in this case. They did produce, I want to say conventions that happened post the injury. But the key, and if we get to this first question, you have to look at the contacts of the individual defendant. Now, that conference does not mention which of any of my clients attended. In fact, three are former employees 4 or 5 years before the allegations in this complaint. They had nothing to do with the actual purposely directing to the doctor or the plaintiffs. In fact, all of them have declared that. So when we look at that, the first question, should we just remand it? I think we need to go back to that first question I asked, that due process. You're asking employees who to submit now and put on evidence far from where they live when they've already done a declaration. The other side decided not to put on evidence to refute that those points and just attached other things. The burden we're really getting into now that constitutional issue where the burden placed upon these defendants is pretty high. And if you read it, the one case that comes to mind is the Bristol Myers Squibb case. And it strikes me for two reasons. The first reason, it's an 8-1 decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. The second reason, it's a language they use. We need to have these due process checks because of the coercive power of the state and the imposition, the burden it will put on the defendant. Now, we're not talking about a corporation, and we're not contesting that the corporation here is not properly before the court. It is for jurisdictional purposes. We're talking about employees and the burden of having to litigate far from their home just because they worked for a company that so they could provide for their family. That's a big burden. That's why we have due process. That is why the state and the Supreme Court is so concerned about these contacts and they have to be purposefully directed. There has to be a connection to even get to.
Well, aren't there allegations? And I understand what you're saying is going beyond mere allegations, but Apex parties is what I'm kind of just putting them all together here. I understand they're individuals, but they created the marketing plan, allegedly. They trained a Nevada-based salesperson to effectuate the plan. And those allegations were not refuted by any affidavit that I saw.
That is true. But I think the point is under the Supreme Court test and this what's been adopted is you have to look at the actual, it's not enough just that you have general advertising. It has to be purposely directed. And just my experience dealing with mass tort, I've never seen CEOs, vice presidents be named as defendants. At most, I've seen sales reps who have actually had that contact with the doctor, and that's usually to defeat removal.
What about the Keaton versus Hustler case?
In
where the U.S. Supreme Court said that the editor could be sued for distributing magazines in New Hampshire.
That is a challenging case. I think I would go, and for your honor, I would look at Munley, which is the Nevada Supreme Court case that dealt with a ski resort in the California side of Lake Tahoe, where this court said, look, the fact that he had advertising to entice people to come ski is not enough. And at most we have is general advertising that may have been disseminated. If you look at...
Well, this is pretty different from that, right? So we don't have a case where there was advertising saying, come to a different state to have surgery using this equipment. This was advertising and marketing that was sent to Nevada with the intention that the product be used by doctors in Nevada on Nevada patients, right? So I see that as being quite different.
It is different, but the allegations are general of the corporation. What we need, and that was the declaration, is these six individuals had no communications with the doctor, and that is what they declared. And that is the specific, at least our reading of Calder and these other cases, you have to have that purposeful direction. It's just not
What would be enough?
Enough would be one of these people talked to Dr. Ahmed, like a sales rep, and said, let me tell you about this product. This is how you can use it. That would be enough. is someone actually having the purposeful direction in doing that.
It seems to me, though, that we're talking a lot about usually and maybe and kind of a lot of different, possibly this evidence, possibly that evidence, which in my experience, when people would challenge jurisdiction, oftentimes, if I said I'm inclined to grant the motion on jurisdiction, plaintiff's attorney would say, Judge, under Rule 56, I'd like a little time to do some discovery on jurisdiction before you rule. Great, fine, we'll continue it out 90 days. I'm inclined to deny the motion to dismiss for jurisdiction. Defense counsel would say, Judge, under Rule 56, I'd like a little time to do some discovery before you rule with finality on that issue. That didn't happen here. It just kind of seemed like, and you've said that today, well, I don't think we really need to remand. It's just, it is what it is. It never is what it is.
Well,
and if I had a dime for every time somebody said no amount of discovery is going to address the issue, and then lo and behold, discovery addresses the issue. But even beyond that, even though no Rule 56 request was made, the court very clearly denied it without prejudice. So one of my concerns is, why should we even entertain the writ right now? It seems like you have the avenue, if you choose to do some discovery on jurisdiction and re-raise this issue before the court, whether it's in a motion to dismiss, which can be raised at any time, or a motion for summary judgment, whatever it may be, such that we seem to kind of be falling into that idea right now of the piecemeal litigation that we abhor.
I understand, Your Honor. The argument I think we would have is, yes, it could be remanded. I'm not going to say it could not. I think it's when you look at, we're talking about individuals now having to go through this whole discovery process. And we did do some discovery. I will tell you, it's not part of the record. The doctor did not use the device at issue. At least that's what he said in his interrogatories and his request for admission. So now you send us back. That's fine. We now have this evidence out there, and my six clients have to now incur the cost and the burden. And that's the key thing under the Supreme Court test, is the burden on the defendant. When we already know now that this doctor said he did not use the device that they allegedly promoted. And that's the burden. Now, that's not in the record. I get it. And I understand you could have us send back. But that is, I couch that in, it's that burden that's so important that the Supreme Court really focuses on. And we're talking about employees. If this was just a corporation, I would see that more applicable. We're talking about individual people who now have to incur this cost more as they go forward. And if I can reserve the rest of my time.
Sure. All right, Mr. Jones.
Good afternoon, Justices. A couple of issues that I'll just jump on that were just discussed. There was some evidence, as you obviously identified in the complaint. We talk about Michael Mall and his affidavit, where he talks about being essentially bamboozled during the course of him buying this Renuvion device on a given false information about the entire risk profile of this device for his patients. And he talks about that specifically. Well, I handled that case. It settled in 2022. And in that case, we also successfully sued Van Schaik and Clark in that case, who were both directly involved. Van Schaik approved the sale. She was the one involved in communications, all from Bakersfield, California, where she was living. But she was the person in charge of the Nevada region. And so, and Clark was her guy on the ground making the sale. And so, and she was giving the direction there. So we have that, but also we know that at the time of the sale, it wasn't just Clark, it was also Rencher and it was Hornsby who came out to Nevada physically, were in Nevada, training Clark, training Dr. Mall on how this was supposed to be used. So we know that with this is something that we didn't look at a website and identify who the CEO was and do things that way. That's not how this was done. It was done through knowledge. I represent 44 people.
When Trump says that the plaintiff has the burden to make a showing by producing some evidence, what do you think that means?
Yeah, and I think that's very important, Justice. I think that it means that we do have to prove the burden. And I think that consistent with the holding in Trump, it identifies that we can do that by way of an evidentiary hearing, showing a preponderance of the evidence at that time, or that we can at some point prior to trial demonstrate sufficient case on the issue of jurisdiction that it can go to a jury. And so I think the idea that we would be able to, in discovery, demonstrate this, that there are these jurisdictional connections individually based on the actions and directions of these individual defendants, not because they're associated with the company, of course not, but because they themselves were directly involved here. And I think that we have an opportunity to make a case on that. I do.
Would you agree that we're just talking about specific jurisdiction, not general jurisdiction?
That really is our argument. Okay. Yes, that's what we think that we have to demonstrate that these individuals, either they themselves in Nevada made themselves purposefully availed themselves here in Nevada, or, and in addition, that did relate to the injuries in this case. And so what we have right now is we have a lack of evidence about some of the connecting dots between the injuries in this actual case and the purposeful availment of these individuals. But all of these individuals purposely availed themselves to Nevada. We do have information about that.
But you still have to make the causal connection, right, between that contact and the injury.
We do. And so we know that the device caused this injury. We know that there are injuries from this device. And I will take a note, and I know it's not part of the record, but since it was touched on, I want to just briefly touch on it. It is true that this Dr. Ahmed, in this litigation, has claimed that he actually didn't use the device in this case. Only in litigation, after he was being sued. His medical records say he used the device. He charged my clients for the device. He has injuries consistent with the FDA warning of the device. It seemed very clear that he used the device. My client at all times believed he had used the device, and all the evidence in our view shows he used the device. But we do agree he did admit that he did not use the device in response to a request for admission. We don't think that holds water. Neither did Judge Holtis. And so the claims against Apex remain. So specific jurisdiction is exactly what we think it is. That's the basis of the claims that we have against these individuals. So much of what I have brought down here has already been addressed. And I think that it's been identified that we do need to show evidence. That is our burden, to show evidence. And we've shown some evidence, and we have good reason to believe all of these people. Now, in this very case, through Pro Hoc Vice, the attorney that was lead counsel in my prior case against the same corporation and Clark and Van Skyke is in this case now. His name is Paul Lee, and he's been admitted into this case. And he has the evidence that I'm talking about. So we have, as was disclosed in the prior case, and I know it's not part of the record, but it's in my possession, and it is in the possession of Apex, that we have their marketing plans from 2014 going up to 2020.
So let's focus on what happened here and what we have in front of us today.
Yes.
Can we just go back? So in terms of what is required by Trump, so there's a possibility of an evidentiary hearing, and at least from what I read, I'm not sure. I don't think anybody's arguing that should happen here, because there's not a lot of dispute about the roles of the people. It's just the impact of the roles of the people on the case. Is that fair?
I would phrase it this way, Your Honor. We'd welcome an evidentiary hearing. We'd have no problem with an evidentiary hearing. We think that it would be the most efficient use of everybody's time and efforts to just allow us to go forward in discovery. We'll do some very basic discovery on finding out who are the individuals that actually did sell the product in this case. We have good reason to believe that Meg Mesher was involved, that her brochures were used to pitch Dr. Ahmed, right? We have good reason to believe that. We've seen it done all over the place. I represent 44 people who have been injured by this product around the country, including, you know, a dozen here. So we know how this is done to some degree. And we know the people directly involved. We know Van Skyke is the leader of this part of the country for it. We know that Roman was the corporate representative, and that Roman, Rencher, Hornsby, and Gershon are the ones that came up with this marketing scheme that caused this to be sold in Nevada. So these are things we do know based on evidence in a variety of cases that it's not even disputed. So these are things that the defense knows, that we know. The marketing statements have their names on them.
Short of an evidentiary hearing, what's required?
And I apologize, Your Honor. Can you, what do you mean?
Yeah, so under Trump, short of an evidentiary hearing, what is the plaintiff's burden? What does some evidence really mean?
So it's a prima facie case. And I think that this ends up being a little bit of a challenge, right? Because let me say, so when a motion to dismiss comes, we filed an opposition to a motion to dismiss, and we already had some evidence that we had attached to our complaint, but we attempted to attach more. And I can tell you that it was brought up by the defense at the hearing that they felt it was inappropriate for us to be bringing evidence or something that, that we hadn't had in our, because it was at the pleading stage only, and this is all based on the pleading. And so I will say, to some degree, we feel like we're in a bit of a conundrum, right? Because we're not allowed to do discovery yet, and we haven't even done disclosures in the case, and we're responding to this motion to dismiss. So we have the evidence that, that we think we have. And so what is required in that moment? I think what we've produced, I think, is sufficient for a prima facie case as to these individuals. But certainly in a disclosure that we will be doing in this case shortly, we're going to have these marketing plans and all of these different things. And we talked about these things with the judge, and there was no rejection of these things being real and being known by everybody. And so the allegations we're making, we have some evidence that we've attached, but this is a lengthy complaint, as you can see, with many exhibits, and that's not necessarily customary, but we attached a number of things so that the history of how this came to be can be laid out.
So it was not a verified complaint in this case.
It was not.
Okay. So you make under Rule 8 a short and plain statement of jurisdiction, and you get a motion to dismiss challenge to it. To Justice Bell's question about Trump requiring some evidence, would it be enough then to provide an affidavit of counsel in your mind that, that addresses upon information and belief or knowledge of certain things that pertain to jurisdiction, or does it require some production of something more than that?
And I genuinely don't know for sure what the answer is to that, right? We did have some evidence attached. I've signed the complaint myself, of course, as an officer of the court. That means something. And it's evidence where certainly either we're claiming these things or upon information and belief we are claiming them. But I frankly don't know how that stacks up as evidence. I'm not sure. But the when we made this argument before Judge Holtis, we said, Judge, we just need to go through this discovery so that we can lay these things out and make our disclosures, and it will be very clear. And I also said, I have reason to believe that even though we have allegations against Clark, just as a specific example, we actually don't think he was probably the one involved, though he could have been involved in the sale. And so he said, but we don't know who that person is, and we know that he was involved in these other sales. And so we would be dismissing Clark once we just get the evidence of how this process and these sales went down. That was the framework that we went into it with. We produced what evidence that we could have produced more evidence, frankly, and in retrospect, maybe we should have, but I do think that we did produce enough that it was a sufficient showing that these individuals were, in fact.
What do you say to counsel's argument about fairness? I guess everything is cloaked in traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice. We all remember that from our civil procedure class in law school. So what about the argument that these are individuals who have to carry the burden of potentially litigating a case in a forum where there is no jurisdiction?
Well, of course, you know, we're always conscious of that. And we're not trying to make anything burdensome for anybody. And so the requests that we have made thus far in this case, we have not made a single request even to these individuals, right? We've focused entirely on getting the information through APICS directly because they will have the information. And because they do, they keep logs, they have the emails.
Are they all being represented by the same counsel?
They are. And in fact, the same attorney, Paul Lee, who's an excellent attorney out of Arizona, he's involved, I think, in like the 40-something cases that I've handled thus far involving APICS. So everybody knows all of this information, and so APICS is aware of it, and they have the documentation about this particular sale in this case that we believe relates to this case, but we haven't been given that information yet. We do anticipate there may be some changing out of some of the people if it comes back a little bit differently than what we believe upon information and belief. I know it was mentioned, Justice, previously, that we do have allegations, and the affidavits that were provided by counsel do not refute the affidavit or the information, the allegations that we made in our complaint. And I do think that if they were to be successful in something like this, they would need to specifically say that those things are not true, which they didn't, and for good reason they didn't, because they are true. And so there's parts of the record that I think are meaningful is we have allegations regarding the national plan that was put together, and we specifically say these individuals that were involved in our paragraphs 135 to 145, Rencher, Gershon, Hornsby, Roman, these individuals specifically put together this plan, which we allege is fraudulent and was intentionally deceptive to trick people into using this product and buying this product. We then explain how these individual defendants went about directly marketing the Renuvion to the doctors in Nevada in paragraphs 220 to 229. And again, we lay out how that was done with the individuals involved. And we even talk about how Van Skyke and Mesher were involved in this, and Clark, and how they became part of this process. And so that is laid out in significant detail. Might not be perfect, but I think it's laid out in pretty good detail. We then allege in paragraphs 347 to 359, as well as 479 to 488, that following the sale to Mall, because some of those prior paragraphs talk about how it was done in the case of Mall, the prior case, Jasmine Dior v. Mall, that these same employees made sales under similar pretenses to Ahmed. And some of that we're alleging upon information and belief. They're the same people. It's the same area selling the same thing. And so we believe that those allegations have not been refuted, but we are still lacking some information, some evidence on that. So any other questions? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Your Honor, I'd probably be remiss if I did not utter that I think the key of this case is whether it offends traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice. I never thought I would say that in open court from a days in Civ Pro, but that's where it is. What you heard is a lot about allegations. You heard a lot about these national plans, but as you saw from the Munley case and even the Weitz and Letzenberg case, which I know it's unpublished, these national plans are not enough. It needs to be targeted. It has to be specifically directed. We do not have that evidence. We do not have that presented. And what we're left with is what is the burden, which is the most important thing that we read in Bristol-Myers Squibb. What is the burden on the defendants? That is the most important when we talk about due process. And that is a substantial, as you said, he doesn't need these individuals to get relief. You have the corporation there. You don't need them to get evidence because all the evidence is being held by mostly the corporation.
Well, but there's, we don't do a jurisdictional analysis based on need.
That's true. But what I'm saying is there was an opportunity to do it. He says he's already litigated this type of case several times. There will be there should be depositions. There should be things that link stuff up. He should have produced that. Now he's asking, please just send it back and let me get a redo, putting burden on these six individuals, which is the key to the due process analysis.
Sounds like you're interpreting Trump and that some evidence is a lot of evidence, right? I mean, how much does he have to produce in order to establish this prima facie showing of jurisdictional or minimum context, right?
Yeah, it's minimum context, but they have to be purposely directed to the individuals. And what we're talking about here are the real parties in interest and the doctor. The fact that somebody may have talked to Dr. Mall in Nevada doesn't matter. That's not enough. It's not that they produced some and I'm quibbling over, did it meet the right level? There's just an absence. I have conventions that happened 2 years after the incident. That doesn't count. And so that's the issue, is we don't have the evidence of purposeful direction. Nationwide plans, as this court has held in two cases, is not enough. We read in Fulbright, even having an attorney come and have two conferences with investors is not enough to subject that individual to personal jurisdiction here. We need to have that direction, and especially with these petitioners. We're talking about employees trying to support their families. And that burden in the coercive nature of the state is why there is that due process hurdle.
But look, I mean, lawsuits inconvenient on anybody, whether you're a corporate employee or a guy that gets in a car accident, right? And the plaintiff side is always going to run the risk of, hey, if we drag somebody into this frivolously and don't have the meat on the bones to pursue this case, we're going to end up paying when an 18010 motion for fees and costs comes around after it's dismissed because it was frivolous and we maintained it even through discovery. So I get that part of it, but the continued argument that it's just unjust to these people, there's a remedy for that if it's truly, you know, not an appropriate case. But we've said through orders multiple times, unpublished orders, obviously, but multiple times that defendant doesn't produce anything to contravene the allegations of the plaintiff in the complaint, then it's going to move forward. So to Mr. Jones's point, the idea that they were alleging that there was a marketing plan directed at Nevada and that Clark was trained to effectuate that in Nevada, and that isn't contravened by the affidavits the defense provided, how is it that somehow this shouldn't be allowed to go forward as it is now?
If it was specific, I see your point. I would agree if it was dealing with specific, Nevada-specific marketing targeting. If it's nationwide, I think it does not need to be rebutted to that level because of the case law. But if it was, what you said, directed, this is for Dr. Ahmed, here's your slick sheets, or here are to all slick for Nevada doctors. Here's Nevada Medicare reimbursement, not that it would be reimbursed by Medicare. That was so specific, then yeah, I think you would need to rebut that with an affidavit. We're talking about national
marketing. It's too broad.
It's too broad. With that, I rest and ask the court to grant the petitions.
Thank you, counsel.
All right. Thank you. Thank you both very much. The pleadings were very good. I appreciate your argument.